Thank you. So this is a presentation sort of inspired by the thought of what happens to safety net access programs when we have the expansion of health insurance coverage that we expect to have in 2014, assuming everything you know, survives the constitutional tax and political tax and all the rest. How do I advance? Just click or?
Yeah.
Probably, okay. So I have no relationships to disclose. I'm sort of a very isolated person, and I have no relationships hardly at all. But I do want to acknowledge the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for funding this, and my colleagues for helping me with this, and my research assistant who's in the fifth row. So that's fine. Ready?
Sorry.
So anyway, on with the show. So. According to all projections, we expect to have a good number of uninsured people still after health insurance expansions, although the number of expected uninsured will be roughly cut in half. We'll still have some 20 million. And just a quick snapshot of who that will include. There'll be folks who are temporarily uninsured as they move between the various categories of coverage, particularly those who bump up just above 133% of poverty. We'll have to go into the subsidized insurance exchanges, and that'll probably entail some delay or discontinuity. Also, people who take a new job that has benefits, employers can still have a three-month waiting period. So thinking in terms of short-term gaps in coverage, also obviously undocumented immigrants would be a major component. There'll still be folks for whom the insurance is too expensive to fall under the insurance mandate. These are folks who subsidies bring the cost down to 9.5% of income, but the mandate only goes up to 8%, and there's some issues there about bronze versus silver and individual versus family. But suffice it to say that there'll be some middle-income folks just above the 400% cutoff that for whom they're still not subject to the mandate because coverage is still too expensive. As well as simple non-compliers, folks eligible for Medicaid who don't enroll, as we are well know, that's a continuing issue, and folks subject to the mandate who simply don't purchase and opt to pay the penalty. So this sort of mix will occur, and we need to begin to think about how safety net access programs for the uninsured will help serve this sort of changing composition. So this project began before health insurance reform, but thinking if it didn't succeed, we certainly need the safety net. Even if it does succeed, we'll need it in a different form. And looking at the literature, it occurred to me that we have a lot of studies telling us sort of how inadequate the safety net is for meeting the needs of the uninsured. And of course, that was one of the major justifications and inspiration for health insurance expansion. But we can also find a number of better examples of programs that are pretty well structured that seem to be providing at least adequate or minimally decent access to the uninsured. So this is motivated by the desire to look at these better structured programs to see how well they work and how much they cost, with the view in mind that perhaps they can be replicated. And therefore, the comparison point for this study is looking at how these programs compare not to sort of the normal inadequate safety net, but how they compare to comprehensive insurance, either in the form of Medicaid or private insurance. So the thought is, if there are good models out there and we can build on them to fill sort of most of the remaining gaps, maybe between insurance expansion and improved safety net, at least in some communities, it might be possible to achieve something approaching what we might really call universal access, even if we don't quite have universal insurance coverage. So here are the two communities I want to focus on, Asheville, North Carolina, and Flint, Michigan. And you'll see that I inartfully cut off the other half of the chart because it was the weekend and I was scrambling, and that's the best I could do. But the point is that there were a couple of other case studies that looked at more sort of traditional public hospitals, safety net systems in large urban centers like the ones we've just heard about. And those tend to be ones we're more familiar with. But if you look around, you'll find a couple of good programs in more sort of community-based settings that rely on community hospitals and community physicians, where there's not a traditional public hospital as the base. So the two that I focused on are one in there tend to be county-based: Buncombe County, Genesee County, Asheville, or Flint are more well known. Anywhere from a quarter to almost a half a million folks. These are some of the characteristics. They are not quite as diverse as the overall U.S. population, but some diversity. They're close to sort of medians in terms of household income, a little bit below. With respect to those in the poverty or near poverty level, sort of at approximately the U.S. medians. Interestingly, down here, let's see, look at this figure. The percent of the population of adults without insurance, roughly at the U.S. Average for Asheville, but much better in Flint, despite all the economic distress in Flint. So one of the puzzles is, so we have sort of roughly equal numbers of low-income uninsured adults in both counties, even though Flint is almost twice the size of Asheville, despite the fact that Flint, from all sort of anecdotal accounts, is a more economically depressed area. So there's a bit of a puzzle we need to solve. With respect to Medicaid, the Medicaid programs are sort of average for states. They cover only moderately above the poverty threshold for childless. They cover only a few folks who are childless adults, well below poverty, as opposed to none, or as opposed to all the way up to 100% of poverty. So in any event, that's a quick profile, and obviously there's a lot more detail, and these case studies are available on the website, and I'm happy to send those to folks who email me. So the programs are called Project Access in Asheville-Buncombe County and the Genesee County Health Plan in Flint. And again, there's a lot of detail about the history, funding, support of these things, but I want to kind of get to the basic facts about what they cost and how much access they provide. So again, thinking about the different models of safety net access programs for the uninsured, there are ones based on public hospitals, but this is based on community hospitals. There's ones that charge sliding scale fees that basically say based on your income poverty category, you pay nothing or a small amount or a substantial amount. But this program actually has, both of these programs have very little or no patient cost sharing. So the services are either free or virtually free for copays of $5 or nothing or $2. In terms of covering undocumented residents, all the programs are limited to low-income uninsured residents, but Asheville will cover regardless of citizenship, immigration status, whereas Flint, you have to be a legal resident or a citizen. Both programs cover up to 175% of poverty. This is as of 2008 was my target year. These numbers tend to fluctuate depending on program funding. In terms of program size, they're pretty sizable. So we have 6,000 low-income uninsured adults in the Asheville program, which is about a third of the area population who might qualify. Whereas in Flint, we surprisingly have more folks in the program than are qualified. And so here again, we get to the puzzle of this discontinuity. But we'll just call it all the qualified people are covered, 21,000 compared with 16. Well, here's the answer to the puzzle, which is that how do we know they're uninsured? It's just surveys. And if the access provided by the program is so good that people think it's virtually insurance, they'll answer that they're insured even though they aren't. So we essentially have an underreporting of uninsurance or an overreporting of insurance by low-income folks in the Flint area. I think attributable to the fact that the program is so well structured, because what they do is that they actually advertise widely. Folks come into a central office, they document their entitlement, that you're given an enrollment card, they're assigned a primary care medical home based on the kind of studies that you've just heard about. And as needed, they're referred to specialists, their prescription drug access programs, hospitalization, testing, outpatient, you name it. Pretty much a comprehensive range of basic medical services. As far as how this is paid for, the Asheville program pays only for the primary care that's provided through a county clinic that has employed physicians. Flint pays only for physicians. They pay primary care and specialists in the community at Medicaid rates or slightly above Medicaid rates. All the rest is charity care. So all the hospital care is charity care, and in a form that I call coordinated charity care. And in Asheville, it's sort of coordinated specialist referrals also provided by charity care. And so by coordinated, I mean that it's arranged by the program, and the hospitals in particular agree to accept referrals from this program as sort of essentially predetermined for eligible for their charity care policies. In one fashion or another, and it's more complicated in this story, but basically all the basic elements of a a reasonable continuum of care is provided. Now, the major components of care are excluded. Long-term care, mental health care is dealt with separately, and some other specialized services are not included. But this is essentially what is. So, indeed, there is evidence, anecdotal and otherwise, that when you ask folks, they feel like, you know, I have something like coverage. I mean, you call it insurance or not insurance, but I have a place to go, and I'm covered if I have these needs and what have you. So that's sort of a subjective impression that you get a form of access here that begins to resemble insurance, even if it isn't. But more objectively, we can measure the access through the actual use of services. So come at this a couple of different ways. One is, let me get my clicker here. Okay, these are a set of national norms. This is all kind of complicated, but and we're not looking at the precise numbers, but kind of the general range. So in terms of, so on the upper half are national norms, and the lower half are the metrics for the two programs. So in terms of number of doctor visits of any kind per person, annualized on average for 2008, for insured or general populations nationally, you get this range of around 3 to 4, and in these programs you get this range of 3 to 5. So basically in the same ballpark. In terms of primary care visits, again, nationally for insured or otherwise, sort of the general norms are anywhere from 1.5 to whatever, 2.5, and here we have 2.5 to 4. So actually, the primary use of primary care is quite a bit, looks very favorable compared to national norms. Now, these are not risk adjusted or anything of the sort, but these are just sort of broad ballparks. In terms of use of the emergency room, and here we're looking for sort of lower numbers, the numbers are, you know, moderate, 50% of the people per year, annualized basis, 40 to 50% of the programs go to have an emergency room visit. And that's not, that's within the sort of general range we see nationally for these broad populations. The only area where we see sort of underutilization is hospitalization, perhaps because of the need to rely on charity care, the fact that the hospitals aren't sort of an actual sort of partner of the program, but simply referral. We only see about half the hospitalization rate that we see in this one metric for adults nationally. So if we compare locally, this is sort of looking in Flint at the dark bar is the program of participants, the lighter gray is a comparison population of locally privately insured folks. And we see sort of basically what I said before in terms of similar visit rates for primary care and the like. But a lower use of specialists, and that may be because you need the referrals and because primary care is encouraged, also a lower rate of hospitalization. Looking at the Asheville program, now take a step further, and now this is actually risk adjusted. We're able to get claims data that could adjust for the risk status using diagnostic categories and then comparing directly to the local Medicaid population. And so this is sort of a Medicaid utilization rate adjusted for the fact that the program health status is about, well, the Medicaid population is about 15% sicker, so these are slightly inflated to account for, well, discounted, inflated, whatever, to risk adjust. But it's only about a 12 or 15% adjustment factor, so even if you took that out, it kind of verifies that these are similar populations. And here we see a little bit lower, but not too dissimilar primary care use. Substantially a lower use of the ER and somewhat lower hospitalization rates. Anyway, so moving on then to cost, but the point is I think we have here a program that sort of, at least on the surface, is providing pretty good access. I'm almost out of time, so I'll move very quickly through cost. So at the bottom line is the cost per person measured in terms of either what they pay for or the value of donated services according to institutional cost is roughly $140, $150 per person per month. How does that compare with if these people were covered by insurance? So we did local comparisons that, again, were risk adjusted. Basically, this is about half the rate of what it would cost to cover that same population by local Medicaid in Asheville and about 50% less than it would cost to cover that same population by local private insurance. Again, using a sort of a detailed claims diagnosis adjusted risk adjuster. So overall, in both of these programs, we're finding access that's pretty good at resource cost, that is the actual value of the services provided that are substantially less than full insurance. And so we then think, with the closing thought, is can these programs be adapted to fit the needs of the newly uninsured? And the basic line is that to do that, I think we have to move more towards a sliding scale approach, because we've got to sort of find a program that now can expand beyond sort of the core of the low-income uninsured to include these other folks that have gaps in coverage, that have middle-income folks, that have unaffordable coverage, and the like. And once we move beyond the folks who are low-income, we need to begin to think of ways to charge sliding scale. But maybe by adapting these programs to a more sliding scale model, we can find a model that really serves the needs, that can build on communities that don't have traditional public safety net hospitals, but can still do a good job in the way that we've seen. And in this way, this is sort of a little parody joke slide, you know, Obama with the mission accomplished pasted in from the Iraq war. But maybe in some sense, we can feel that, at least in some communities, we could achieve this basic accomplishment of decent access for everyone or most of us, even if we still lack universal coverage. And so with that tantalizing suggestion, I'll turn things over to the next speaker. Thank you.